Wisconsin's abundance of pure silica sand has made it the country's hotbed for sourcing a key ingredient in the hydraulic fracturing process. That's the conventional way you extract oil and natural gas in our country. We're going to talk about this on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Frac sand mines have sprung up across the country, also in Texas as well, where there is such a mining boom right now. According to the state DNR's count, there are 92 active mines here in Wisconsin. That count was published a year and a half ago. Thomas Pearson is an associate professor of anthropology and assistant director of the Honors College at UW-Stout. His new book is When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, let's start with the title of your book, When the Hills Are Gone. What is the significance of that title, and what do you mean by it?
Well, the title, it was actually inspired by a documentary film that was produced by Jim Tittle called The Price of Sand. And one of the soundtracks in the film makes reference to the hills being gone. And I liked that phrase because it really underscores how conflicts over frac sand mining in Wisconsin, which are often debated and discussed in terms of the environmental impacts and the economic impacts, how they also are about the ways in which people relate to place and landscape. And the controversies and the conflicts that really surrounded this industry, it also revealed a conflict over place.
Do they have a direct correlation to the topography, though?
What do you mean by
the hills? When the hills are gone, is there something in mining that relates to these hills?
Yeah, I mean, well, in western Wisconsin, where the frac sand industry has been concentrated, in part, it's located here because of this is where the sandstone bedrock is located, but much of it is in the hills and bluffs of this area. And that's the topography that really kind of characterizes the western Wisconsin. And so when this industry really began to boom several years ago, it sparked a lot of controversy, but it sparked grassroots opposition in many communities. And a lot of the citizens who had organized in response to the rapid growth of frac sand mining, they framed their opposition in terms of saving the hills. So some of the first grassroots groups were called Save Our Hills, and one of the most significant kind of regional groups in the area is the Save the Hills Alliance. And the ways in which they frame their concerns and their engagement in this issue, it really underscores how this, how this kind of raises questions about the ways in which people relate to place and landscape, that we often look at the hills and just assume it's a backdrop to day-to-day life, but people develop a strong connection to the places that they live. They develop ties to the landscapes where their lives unfold, and these connections become a basis for their sense of self and for their sense of self and shared identity. And so when frac sand mining really boomed, it was disruptive on many levels in many communities, and one of those had to do with just the ruptures to how people connected to place.
Well, we know that fracking in and of itself has gotten a lot of attention in recent years, and there's been a lot of controversy over it. But frac sand mining, which is, you know, the sand is necessary to frack a well, that hasn't quite risen to that same level of awareness. Why do you think that is?
I mean, it has been a kind of a regionally specific issue. When frac sand mining first really boomed around 2007, 2008, I think it caught a lot of people off guard in Wisconsin. It was rather unprecedented. I first got engaged in this issue around 2011, 2012, and I knew very little about hydraulic fracturing at that point, and I knew next to nothing about frac sand mining. And it was when an operation was proposed in my community that I first began to kind of look into it and really approach it from the perspective of a concerned citizen. And for a lot of people, I don't think really realized how this issue kind of connects to a larger commodity chain of oil and gas production in the United States. Hydraulic fracturing, which is often characterized as an unconventional form of energy development, is relatively new itself. It really began to take off just within the last 10, 12 years. And as you noted, the increased demand for frac sand because of hydraulic fracturing is what spurred the rapid growth of the mining industry in western Wisconsin. And I think that it's only recently that people, not only in Wisconsin, but across the country, are beginning to kind of see how their localized struggles that unfold in relation to natural resources are connected to these broader commodity chains and networks.
So when a mine was proposed in your community, what did you do as a concerned citizen? What was your step, and then how did this book evolve?
Well, so initially I just wanted to understand what was going on. And so I'm a professor at University of Wisconsin-Stout, so I attended a presentation, and then I attended a film screening of the documentary Gasland. And I was surprised that there were about a dozen people from the community at this film screening, and Gasland focuses on some of the impacts of hydraulic fracturing in different parts of the country. And so following the film, people from the community began to talk about the issue of frac sand mining. And that's when I really began to recognize the connections. And it was around that time that a company called Vista Sand had proposed a rail loadout facility, a rail spur in Menominee, where I live, and an associated mine in Glenwood City. And that's about 25, 30 miles away. And so I, seeing how close this was to my community, I just began to attend town meetings to learn more about what was going on. And there were a group of citizens who were meeting each Saturday in someone's garage to educate themselves, but also to kind of organize and to learn about the industry, but then to organize in order to stop the proposed operation in Menominee and in Glenwood.
So you started talking with lots of people and gathering notes, I would assume?
Yeah, so my first kind of involvement as a concerned citizen, it quickly evolved into a research project. So
because you're an anthropologist by trade.
Yeah, so my background is in cultural anthropology, and we tend to research social things, social events and behaviors and issues through interviews and through participation, through participant observation. So I began to initially just to take notes, describing my experiences in these meetings and observing these conflicts, and talk to people, and just began to conduct research through my experience, and then also conduct more formal interviews on different aspects of the conflicts that were taking place, not only in my community, but in dozens of communities throughout western Wisconsin.
Thomas Pearson is with us. He's an associate professor of anthropology at UW-Stout. His new book is When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How has your community been affected by frac sand mining? Where do you draw the line between creating economic opportunities and preserving the land, the environment in Wisconsin? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Thomas, mining hasn't been a part of this state's heritage for a long, long time, and that has historically included sand mining. What's different now, in your opinion?
Well, it's true that sand mining has been around for a long time in Wisconsin, and there have been a couple kind of large-scale industrial sand mines that have existed for decades. But around 2006, when the frac sand industry really began to rapidly grow in western Wisconsin, there were only two or three, just a handful. And over the course of the subsequent 5 years or so, the industry expanded rapidly. So in part, what was different was just the rapid growth of frac sand mining, which includes the mines themselves, the extraction sites, but also the processing plants, and then the rail spurs. So you have really a relatively new industrial extractive activity that that was rapidly growing in largely in western Wisconsin and in a few particular kind of areas of western Wisconsin. So just the rapid growth and then the scale, you know, when you have this growth going from just a handful to then dozens, and then as you mentioned, a year and a half ago, the DNR was estimating nearly 100 active operations. That's a really rapid pace, and then when those are concentrated in a few areas of western Wisconsin, it introduces new environmental impacts, but also a type of social disruption that a lot of people were not, that no one could really anticipate at the time.
Why are these mines here in Wisconsin? Because the oil patch is well over 1,000 miles away in Texas, Louisiana, and elsewhere.
Yeah, so initially, I mean, the sandstone in western Wisconsin, it's considered to be of a very high quality, so very pure, almost pure quartz, pure silica sand, and it's in large concentrations and relatively close to the surface. And so if you remove just a few feet of topsoil in some instances, then you have you access the sandstone. So it's kind of easy to get to, and then there are, relatively speaking, good transportation infrastructure is available, so access to railroads. And 5 years ago, it was cost effective for the oil and gas industry to mine huge amounts of this sand in Wisconsin and then ship it around the country. In the past couple years, the price of oil has dropped, and so due to those kind of global commodity shifts, it has no longer been as cost effective because to ship this material is very expensive, and so the demand for frac sand plummeted within the past couple years due to the decline in the price of oil.
This type of mining being a boom and bust cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of went through that predictable cycle of a boom and then bust, and underscored the volatility of energy markets.
We're tracing the frac sand mining history in Wisconsin, looking at the questions and tensions that have surfaced as frac sand mining evolved into an industry here in Wisconsin. About a decade ago, there was a rush to open mines on rural land. The book is When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. Thomas Pearson stays with us. He's an associate professor of anthropology at UW-Stout. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has your community been affected by frac sand mining? If so, how? Where do you draw the line between creating economic growth and preserving the natural resources here in Wisconsin? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment. We're looking at the frac sand mining story here in Wisconsin. It's a story we're exploring on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Looking at frac sand mining through the lens of a new book by UW-Stout anthropologist Thomas Pearson, who stays with us. It's called When the Hills Are Gone. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. Gathering your thoughts on frac sand mining as well at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I wanted just to address some of the things that I've heard from the frac sand mining industry. One of the most repeated ones is the one that your guest already mentioned, that sand mining has always been done in Wisconsin, and that, but this is a different scale. This is a way different scale. And they've also mentioned the miner on Wisconsin's flag, but that was in the mid-1800s, and they were talking about some small line, lead mines and mines where people were employed, hundreds of people were employed with picks and axes and mules and horses. So this is by the industry's own publications, a highly mechanized mining with a lot of robots and automated self-operating diggers and all that. That's the future of mining. And as far as the economic impacts, I think a lot of them are negative impacts, like they affect the property values of people living around these mines. And if there is such an economic impact, of small village in western Wisconsin, close to where I live, New Auburn, should be a hopping little place with all sorts of economic opportunity. But instead, people are trying to move out and having a hard time selling their property because no one wants to live around these massive industrial sites. And they've had...
And Willem, I'm going to have to stop you there because there's a lot to unpack that you just said. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the caller is correct. I mean, the economic benefits of frac sand mining are questionable. I mean, obviously, there are some people who make money off of the industry selling or leasing their land. There are people whose livelihoods depend on the industry, and I think it's important to recognize that. But the economic impacts in terms of the benefits and the costs, they are distributed inequitably. And so whereas some people might make money off of the industry, others then have to deal with a decline in property values or impacts on other economic sectors, or they have to deal with new environmental hazards, or now their quality of life has been totally disrupted by the growth of an industrial extractive industry. And so I think it's important to recognize that. And he is correct that this, the growth of this industry, it was unprecedented in western Wisconsin. It caught most communities off guard. They weren't prepared for some of the issues that are related to it. And so the industry, recognizing that they don't have deep historical roots in the region, and that there are very complicated costs and benefits, they do attempt to claim legitimacy to belong within the region. So as a caller was saying, making kind of touting the history of mining, or the references to symbolic references to mining in the state flag, that's often used as a way to try and for the industry on their behalf to kind of assert their legitimacy amid the controversy in many communities.
Are property values impacted by these mines?
I mean, I think as a caller mentioned,
that anecdotal?
Offhand, I don't have specific studies to reference. I wouldn't say it's anecdotal in the sense that when you talk to people who live in communities where heavy mining activity occurs, many people don't want to live next to a mine. They don't want to live next to an industrial processing facility. Their quality of life has been radically altered by constant truck traffic or the drone of a mile-long conveyor belt. And so they're coping with a disruption to their life, and they live with new kind of forms of anxiety and fear about potential environmental hazards and about what the future of their home will be like. And that translates into an impact on property values in the sense that very few people elect to live next to an industrial mining activity. And one of the indicators, I think, is how many of the development agreements that were negotiated between towns and specific mining companies, they often would include provisions such as a property value guarantee. So the mining industry recognizing that people who don't want to live next to their operations might have trouble selling their home or selling their property, and basically saying they'll make up the difference if they have to sell their property at a loss.
Well, so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so that's kind of a tacit recognition that frac sand mining impacts adjacent property values.
William, thanks for the call. Let's now bring in a town official. William is joining us from Central Wisconsin. William, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling and I'm thanking you for having this subject on because it has been an interesting subject for us as town officials. And as your speaker has indicated, it used to be that towns had the opportunity to negotiate agreements so that we could protect our citizens, but the state legislature and the state in itself has decided to take away local control, and we as town boards are extremely frustrated with the fact that we no longer can control what happens to our citizens. The state has taken our power away. They've talked about how they always want to give local control back, which is just the opposite of what has happened with the laws that they have passed. We no longer can mandate or require a lot of things that we used to be able to do as elected officials to protect our citizens. And the citizens are left with exactly what your speaker is talking about, lower property values. They have to live with the dust. They have to live with the noise. And they have concerns in regard to the water. One thing that's not being discussed is how much water is being used with these frac sand mines. That's a huge concern for a number of us as elected officials, along with some of the other problems. So I just wanted to share that with the listeners.
Well, William, thanks for calling in. And Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the issue of local control is a very significant one. And it's one of the themes and one of the stories that I try to tell in the book, because early on when frac sand mining first began to take off in western Wisconsin, around 2006, 2007, the industry began to kind of follow the path of least resistance. So counties and towns that had zoning regulations, towns that had a lot of opportunities for citizens to be engaged in the decision-making process, they were able to kind of deter proposed operations that they viewed as having negative impacts. And so the industry began to go to counties where fewer towns were part of county zoning, for example, or where local elected officials were much more accommodating of the industry, or in some cases had indirect financial ties to the industry. And early on, towns such as the town of Howard and Cooks Valley in Chippewa County, they developed a licensing ordinance, basically, to have some mechanism to regulate the industry, to kind of dictate the operating conditions of proposed mining operations. Because they were unzoned, they didn't have really any other means to exert any control. The licensing ordinances, initially they were met by lawsuits because the pro frac sand mining interests did not view them in positively, but the Wisconsin State Supreme Court upheld the right of local municipalities to adopt these ordinances, and that was in 2012. And since then, the legislature has kind of chipped away at the authority of local towns to use these mechanisms and to exercise local control. And it's something that, across the political spectrum within many towns in western Wisconsin, people support in principle the idea that they should have a role in the decision-making process when it comes to an industry like frac sand mining.
And And control and power is one of the central themes of your book as you look at what a mining company wants to come to a small town and open up shop. And then there are all of the other stakeholders, what they want, residents, landowners, company officials, environmental activists. How big of a tug of war is it between all of these stakeholders? And are you seeing neighbor against neighbor?
Yeah, definitely. I think on one level, I mean, this issue obviously was tremendously controversial, and it often drew hundreds of people to town meetings that otherwise would be low-key affairs, and they suddenly became these hotly disputed and very contentious discussions. And a lot of the concerned citizens who would attend these meetings, they became very frustrated by some of the ways in which the mining industry was able to exert influence over the democratic decision-making process. So for a lot of people, I think it really underscored the growth of influence and power of mining corporations. And obviously this has been divisive. It's a very polarizing issue. And so one of the things that I try to examine in the book, in addition to how people kind of grapple with these issues in the context of the local democratic decision-making process, is just to understand the impacts on community in the sense of trauma that a lot of communities had experienced. Obviously, it pits neighbor against neighbor, but there are other factors that kind of heighten the sense of disruption that people feel. Well, you have new environmental hazards that are being introduced, and in scenarios where maybe one landowner has decided to lease or sell their land, and maybe they've signed an agreement with a mining company that has a confidentiality clause, and so there's a sense that they can't talk about it, mm-hmm. And often their neighbors then who will learn months or years later that someone they've lived next to for a long time has suddenly entered into agreement with a mining company, they feel kind of a sense of betrayal that their neighbors have entered into an agreement that's going to create potential hazards that affect their way of life. So that kind of human causality behind that, it kind of sets the stage for resentment and for conflict between between neighbors. And then when you have a scenario where there are confidentiality clauses involved, where there's a sense of secrecy that surrounds what's going on, is it begins to sow a sense of distrust between people.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Thomas Pearson. He's an associate professor of anthropology and an assistant director of the Honors College at UW-Stout. His new book is titled When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has your community been impacted by frac sand mining? If so, how? Have you protested or fought against the creation of a mining operation in the state? And what questions do you have about frac sand mining? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Gary, who joins us from Boscobel. Hi, Gary.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two points I'd like to make. I've been involved with biological conservation and protection of native plant and animal and insect species for almost 50 years. And one of the things that I wonder about the anthropological studies is the human relationship to nature. And here in Wisconsin, as in a lot of other states, industrial agriculture has really devastated and wiped out a lot of native biodiversity over huge regions. Excuse me. And here in the Driftless region, we're fortunate enough to have a fair amount of native biological diversity left. And when these frac sand mines are done, on the footprint of that mine, the biological diversity that lives there, native diversity, is completely extinct. And I'm wondering in the future how human interaction and its disconnect with nature, or the loss of biodiversity and the interaction with human beings, is going to affect society. And another question I had is, people are looking at the actual physical impacts of frac sand mining as a society and the division in our societies. But what about the ultimate results? And that is extracting hydrocarbons from the earth and then burning them and releasing all those poisons into the atmosphere. I'm wondering if society really thinks far enough ahead to understand the ultimate consequences and the chain reaction caused by burning fossil fuels connected with frac sand and frac sand mining.
Gary, thanks for calling in with those questions. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, these are two excellent questions. I think it's interesting how a lot of the people who became engaged in the frac sand mining conflicts, they often don't have a background as an environmentalist or as an activist, and many people hadn't really been politically engaged in local issues, and so they became involved because a frac sand mine had been proposed near where they live. And so for many people, this was a jarring and life-changing moment. And it kind of sparked for them a new way of thinking about the environment as a potential source of hazard. A lot of people, they just kind of view the environment as this benign backdrop to their day-to-day life. And when you have a mining industry that that introduces potential hazards to groundwater or to air quality, then suddenly that the environment that surrounds us, it is kind of viewed in a new way. And so one of the things that I do in the book is just try to understand the different kind of cultural values that influence the ways in which people relate to the environment and place and landscape. And I think that people kind of relate to the environment in different ways. I don't think it's just one particular particular form. And then the other question that the speaker raised about how frac sand mining relates to the fossil fuel industry and the fossil fuel regime, I think that's a really important question. And for a lot of the concerned citizens and grassroots activists, not only did frac sand mining kind of spark a new new way of thinking about the environment, but it made people confront the ways in which this industry relates to fossil fuel production, but the ways in which, you know, they're tied to this larger system. Energy is another one of those things that we often take for granted. We just assume that it's abundant and that it's just kind of a fact of life. But all of our behaviors, whether it's driving a car or heating our home, that's connected to a larger system. And frac sand mining, obviously, it's connected to hydraulic fracturing and fossil fuel production. And it's part of an energy regime that contributes directly to global climate change. And so I think that that's an issue that many people began to think about in new ways as a result of this seemingly very localized industry.
Wisconsin's pure silica sand is a key ingredient for frac sand, which is pumped into oil and gas wells to crack open rocks deep down in the Earth's core and get the fossil fuels flowing up to the surface. This sand has been essential for shale drilling, but for drillers, this prized commodity is far from the oil patch where the sand is needed. We're having a conversation about the frac sand mining industry here in Wisconsin this hour with the author of the new book, When the Hills Are Gone. Thomas Pearson is an associate professor of anthropology at UW-Stout. You can join in. Have you protested or fought against the creation of a mining operation in Wisconsin? And what questions do you have about frac sand mining in the state? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in just a moment. We'll be right back. Western Wisconsin communities have experienced the boom and bust nature of the oil and gas industry firsthand. Mines mine processing sand 1 year, and the next year mines stripped down to a skeleton crew going dormant. Now, frac sand deposits found in Texas are booming because it's cheaper for companies to source it more locally than transporting the sand from more than 1,000 miles away. It's topical as our discussion this hour of the morning show is around the new book, When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and author Thomas Pearson stays with us. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Jack, who joins us from Williams Bay. Hi, Jack.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to just join in. My company, we have a factory in Northern Illinois, and we had like 2 weeks' notice that there was going to be a the sale of a 200-acre farm across the street, and they were going to turn that into a giant frac sand handling facility and build a railroad spur and all that kind of thing. And it was going to be 24 hours with a nonstop parade of trucks and trains.
So, Jack, how did your company respond? What did you do?
Well, the town was even kind of totally surprised by this because there were confidentiality agreements with the village. And so we just kind of started going door to door and letting everybody know what was happening. And so when they were going to have a meeting, and it was already decided they were going to approve it, you know, even before the citizens knew about it. And but we got maybe a quarter of the town to show up to the meeting, and they went ahead and they approved it anyway, despite the whole town virtually against it, except the guy who owned the land, who we were selling to the frac sand
And so what is the situation like today? Bring us up to today.
Well, my dad was the president of our company at the time, and he basically, well, he hired a big law firm and spent a couple of years of his life, and he's in his 80s. Spent, you know, a lot of money to fight this and to discourage them from coming.
Was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. I think the town probably wouldn't have survived this facility because it was on the west end of the town, and there's an average wind speed of maybe 10 miles an hour that comes from the west. So it would have basically covered the town. The town probably couldn't have withstood it, let alone, and we would have had to close our factory.
So it didn't come to fruition.
No, they actually stopped. Yeah, so it was actually stopped, and well, we read a lot of our research involved, you know, the history of how these things came about in Wisconsin. A lot of the research, and so we kind of got an idea how the companies operate. So,
well, Jack, thank you for calling in with that story. Let's get Thomas to respond. Thomas, go ahead.
I think his story resonates with the experiences of many communities in western Wisconsin, where seemingly out of nowhere, a frac sand mine or operation is proposed, and the local officials are very accommodating of the industry, and there's this kind of aura of inevitability that surrounds it, this sense that they can do nothing except permit it. And many residents, they are often shocked because they view this as a potential threat to their way of life and to their community. And in the case that Jack was describing, it sounded like the rail spur or the processing plant was located in close proximity to the town itself where people live. And that has happened in a number of cases in western Wisconsin where you have this industrial activity with where there are uncertainties about the environmental health impacts, especially with regards to exposure to silica dust. And it's in close proximity to a school or to a residential neighborhood. And so when residents kind of see this happening close to where they live, they try to stop it, and they end up entering into this drawn out conflict, and the outcome often depends on factors, ranging from who is on the local town board and how accommodating they are of the industry, and whether or not there are mechanisms for citizens to be engaged in that decision making process, whether or not there are ordinances that allow for local control in terms of licensing ordinances, whether or not zoning is in place. So the conditions vary tremendously and really play a significant role in shaping the potential outcome.
Jack, thank you so much for the call. Thomas, supporters say the economic impact of frac sand mining is too good to pass up, especially in these small rural communities that still may be strongly feeling the effects of the Great Recession. What do we know about the impact of jobs?
That's been a kind of a contentious issue. And on one side, you have obviously the industry and supporters who touted frac sand mining as an engine of job creation. And that was a narrative that was that gained a lot of traction in the context of the Great Recession, when the industry began to boom. And that was just as when the national economy was beginning to decline. And so by 2008, there was a lot of anxiety and uncertainty within rural communities. And so frac sand mining was viewed as something that had to be accommodated because of the potential job creation. But there are others who note that the amount of jobs are quite small, relatively speaking. And then, of course, there are other factors that determine the ability of a local community to capture the potential economic benefit. So will the people who work at that mining operation live in the community that's hosting it? Does the community have other businesses that will service that frac sand mine? So those factors, go a long way in determining whether or not benefits can stay within that host community. And then, of course, as we've seen with the boom and bust cycle, this is a very volatile industry. Whereas 5 years ago, the job creation narrative was one that resonated with many people, within the past 2 years, that frac sand mines had been laying off employees, and that was the first thing they did when the when demand began to plummet. They started to cut jobs as a way to try to maintain their profit margins,
offset the costs. Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another call with Patricia, who wants to talk about the Hoffman Hills mine. Patricia, go ahead.
Yeah, I was involved in the garage meetings with the neighbors who were fighting the Hoffman Hills proposal. Back some years before, and I got involved because I was concerned about the park and about the people, and we met, and we went through the county planning and zoning, and the Board of Adjustment, and that's where it was defeated, and it was all because just of a couple people listened to what the neighbors had to say and were concerned enough about the effects of the project to deny the permit.
But when you
look at the amount where this sand is, it's all throughout western Wisconsin. There is nobody in western Wisconsin who is safe from a sand mine proposal. No homeowner can go to bed and not be sure that his neighbor isn't going to sell his land to the company and destroy the qualities of life that we all moved to Wisconsin for.
Well, it's interesting, Patricia, you mentioned that it destroyed relationships, and relationships being a fabric of these communities. Thomas, can you respond to that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things that I try to do in the book is to try to kind of shine a light on those social impacts or the dynamics in communities. A lot of the discussion around frac sand mining, it has focused on the economic impacts, and definitely those are complex and important. or it's focused on the environmental impacts, and that's another area that deserves a lot of attention and discussion. But what often gets lost is how is the human experience, how frac sand mining disrupts people's ways of life, how it undermines their connections to place and landscape, how it creates new forms of conflict with people in communities, or the ways in which it's kind of related to the growing distrust among not only neighbors, but between residents and local town officials who were very accommodating of the industry or who had potential ties to the frac sand industry. And so those kind of perceived conflicts of interest, which you know, has been an issue in many communities in western Wisconsin, it, you know, it creates a context in which people become suspicious and distrustful of their local elected officials. And so definitely one of the things that the book tries to do is to really kind of work through that human experience and the ways in which people's sense of community has been altered by frac sand mining.
Well, Patricia, thank you so much for calling in with your thoughts. Thomas, because of falling oil prices, frac sand mining has seemingly dried up in many places, pretty much ending a boom that lasted for years. And yet it seems inevitable that another boom is somewhere on the horizon. How are activists preparing for that time?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's difficult to predict, right? Because when frac sand mining first boomed in western Wisconsin, no one really saw it coming. And so who knows what the next boom will look like. Even as the industry declined the past couple years, it didn't disappear, and there were communities that were still engaged in conflicts and struggles around frac sand mining. And as you noted, we've seen kind of a shift now as especially in Texas, the oil companies are trying to source frac sand from mines closer to the well sites. So that's definitely something that's undercutting demand for Wisconsin frac sand. But things are beginning to kind of to creep back up in Wisconsin, and it's something that will probably continue to be an issue over the long term. I think that in western Wisconsin, concerned citizens and grassroots organizers who have been engaged in this issue, they're beginning to look beyond their local place-based struggle. They're beginning to connect their confrontation with frac sand mining with similar struggles that are occurring along the fossil fuel commodity chain at pipelines or refineries or the sites of fracking themselves. There's a lot that people in these different places at these different points along the commodity chain have in common in terms of the issues that they're dealing with. And so I think people who are engaged in the frac sand mining issue here are beginning to kind of connect with that bigger picture. And I think that's important to do as we confront the realities and the threats of climate change.
Well, Thomas, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thomas Pearson is an associate professor of anthropology and assistant director of the Honors College at UW-Stout. His new book is titled When the Hills Are Gone, Frac Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.